You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine, whatever it is that you're doing, wherever it is that you're going on this Friday. I want to thank you for taking us along and making us part of your day. I am John Corrales, one third of the Rain and Jays. I was supposed to be here with a guest, but you know, shit happens and it didn't work out. And I gave Jay King and Sam Packard the day off. So I, John Corrales of RedsArmy.com and Boston.com, am going to be here on my own to talk about my latest piece for Boston.com, The Anatomy of a Comeback, and breaking down the last couple of minutes of that Celtics comeback against the Utah Jazz. A couple of things that went right, a couple of things that went wrong for Utah, bad decisions, and some dumb luck. Talk a little bit about the Stevens Coach of the Year stuff that's been kind of festering. Joel Embiid is seriously injured, and that's going to impact what the Celtics face in the playoffs. I'll talk about that. And a couple of notes about Ray Allen talking and not shutting his mouth, and the NBA, the Basketball Hall of Fame, and why it's not just the NBA. And I'll talk about all of that momentarily. Let me start with my latest piece on Boston.com. If you do not know, I am a regular contributor on Boston.com in their Celtics coverage. And my latest piece is The Anatomy of a Comeback, How a Furious Stretch Set Up the Celtics Game Winner in Utah. Jay and Jam did a fantastic job in the Thursday show talking about that game winner and that improbable win over the Utah Jazz. And having thought about it and not having had a chance to talk about it, here I am to do both. Well, I've already thought about it. That doesn't make any sense, but I'm going to keep going. That's okay. No editing here. I haven't had a chance to talk about it, though. And having thought about it, I looked at the last basically 2 minutes, 2:16 to be exact. And it's some interesting things here because after 24 hours of processing this entire thing, here are a few things that we get to see when it comes to coming back in that situation. So with 2:16 left, the Celtics were down 94-88 to Utah. And that's where Greg Monroe scored a basket and made it 94-90, which was benign at the time. But at that point, it was a key basket in that it kept the Celtics alive. And Gobert had just been dominating the game defensively. The Celtics had made some adjustments in the second half, which had started to work, but Monroe challenging Gobert and putting basically a one-on-one move on him and scoring was important because it kept the Celtics within four with a couple minutes to go, and that set up an opportunity for them to put their zone defense to work. And that zone defense, to start, forced the Jazz to get the ball to Ricky Rubio, who was more than happy to shoot for some reason. But the Utah Jazz didn't need him to shoot. They needed to work the ball around and get a better shot. The Jazz offense tends to get into opportunities later in the shot clock. And when the Celtics zone defense confused them, that's part of what led to Rubio taking that shot, because he caught the ball with 5 seconds to go on that shot clock. And that was basically the best shot that the Jazz put themselves in a position to get. And because of that, that played right into the Celtics' hands. The next part of this was that insane hustle play of Shane Larkin, which the guys have talked about and I won't go too crazy about, but that's the type of thing, that's the type of hustle play that changes the momentum of the game in a lot of ways, because the other team is tired and they're just like, let's just do this. And the team that's coming back has that just kind of boost of adrenaline. And when Larkin can keep that ball alive, that was huge because it let Monroe get the ball and get fouled and get the Celtics to within two. That lets the zone defense get into play again, and Donovan Mitchell turned the ball over to get the ball to Jason Tatum eventually for the transition dunk. And here are the two plays that I really want to focus on, because these are the things that really, really won the Celtics the game, and it never really got a lot of attention. With 101 to go and the score tied, the Celtics were on their heels a little bit defensively, and Donovan Mitchell kind of got into the lane and forced a floater that caused some overreactions. And Rudy Gobert basically got to the rim kind of untouched. Maybe a little bit of a nudge from Jason Tatum, but he had an opportunity to get an offensive rebound. It hit him in the hands with a minute to go, and he didn't get that ball. Jazz, tie game, 16 seconds into the shot clock. That shot goes up, a minute to go in the game, and Gobert has an opportunity to get an offensive rebound and go back up with it, maybe go back up and dunk it, or at least start things up. If the Jazz get that and score, and there's 40 seconds left, now that puts the Celtics in a position to go out and try to get maybe a 2-for-1 so they can try to score twice. Puts a lot of pressure on the Celtics defense to step up, and they're tired. After the game, Jaylen Brown said he had nothing left for the overtime. Instead, the ball goes off of Rudy Gobert's hands. That didn't get a lot of attention. That was dumb luck. Terry Rozier ends up with that ball. Now, the Celtics end up missing, and this is the spot where a lot of people aren't talking about this, and this may have won the Celtics the game. 40 seconds to go. The Jazz have the ball, tied 94 after a miss. Ricky Rubio has the ball in his hands with 40 seconds to go, and they don't push the ball. They don't probe the defense. They don't force the Celtics to match up in transition. They don't do any of that. They walk the ball up and try to set their offense. After basically a few possessions of the half-court sets not working against the Celtics zone. This is a huge mistake to me. And this is the thing that essentially lost the Jazz the game, because with 40 seconds to go, they have an opportunity to use 10 to 12 seconds to get a good shot. Push the ball up the floor. Takes 2 or 3 seconds to push the ball up the floor. Probe. See what you can do. Force the Celtics to overreact to the ball handler, Rubio. Don't just let Rubio bring it up. If you're going to have Rubio on the floor, don't just give him the ball and let Rubio dump it off to Donovan Mitchell, which he did, because Rubio's not a threat. He's not a shooter out there. If you're going to have Rubio on the floor in that situation, he's going to do what he does best, be a passer. That's what Brad Stevens does. He puts people in a position to do what they do best. Ricky Rubio was on the floor. He got the ball with 40 seconds to go at the Celtics free throw line. He basically walks the ball up, hands it over to Donovan Mitchell, and gets out of the way. Why the hell is Rubio even on the floor in that situation if he's just going to be a non-factor? You're playing 4-on-5 to start with. Push the ball up the floor, Utah. Quinn Snyder, push the ball up the floor, probe the defense, force cross matches, force the Celtics to overreact and get somebody an open shot. But they didn't do that. They didn't, and this is where coaching matters. Quinn Snyder didn't get them to do that, and they dribble the ball, they dribble the clock down to 30 before they start initiating the play. And that gets them down to 10 seconds on the shot clock. The Celtics close out on Jay Crowder. They close out on Joe Ingles. Ingles gets the ball back to Crowder, and he has to force a shot with 3 seconds left. Ingles somehow manages to get the ball up off the rim, but the Celtics get the rebound with 14 seconds to go. Now, Utah only has its defense, and they don't have an opportunity to really get a good shot off. If they had pushed the ball up and gotten a shot off within 10 to 12 seconds, even if they had missed, they could run their defense. And even if everything went the exact same way, they would have had 3 or 4 seconds to run an out-of-bounds play and maybe tie things up. That's coaching. That's clock awareness. That's situational awareness. That's where things get lost. Now, Jaylen Brown hit that miracle shot, but it wasn't the miracle shot obviously it was the miracle shot that won the game, but it was the Jazz putting themselves in a position to lose, and the Celtics, after that 2+ minutes of coming back, taking advantage of some bad things that happened on the Jazz side. This entire thing that I talked about is on Boston.com. You can go check it out under their sports section. Boston.com, the anatomy of a comeback. I've tweeted out a bunch of times. @RedsArmy_John for me on Twitter. Find me there. Find this article. It's all over my feed. Couple of other notes here. I want to just kind of piggyback off of that last second win. And I just think that Brad Stevens is basically cementing himself as the coach of the year. I've talked about it before. And I rode the wave a bit. The early part of the season, it was basically Brad's, and then the Celtics went into kind of like a swoon after the London trip, and after the All-Star break, it started a little bit tough. And then Toronto took the top seed, and I said, all right, I can see things going the other way. I can see Dwayne Casey getting this coach of the year, because I think that there is definite value to his candidacy. He got Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan established all-stars to change how they played. And, you know, you can scoff at that all you want, but that's not easy to do. He got Lowry to become more of a playmaker. He got DeRozan to expand his game a little bit. He's not shooting great from three, but he's stepping out, and you have to respect that a little bit at the very least. And he's got a bench full of nobodies. And this is kind of Sam's point in the last show, and young guys to step up. Forget about what happened the year before. Forget about anything else. This is the coach of this year, this season's team, this season. So collapses in the past, they don't matter. It's this season, and he's got the Raptors to the top seed right now. I can see a very legitimate case for Dwayne Casey getting coach of the year. But I think this road trip solidified Brad Stevens. It made Brad Stevens basically the coach of the year, I think, because to beat multiple Western Conference playoff teams, to go out there and to time and time again, without Kyrie Irving, without Marcus Morris in the last game, without Al Horford, without a bunch of players, Marcus Smart, to keep winning, to beat Utah at home, to beat Portland at home, to beat Oklahoma City before they went out west, to win all of these games against teams fighting for the playoffs. Utah needed that win. Portland was a very important game. Oklahoma City, these are seeding things. To win those games so shorthanded, that's amazing. And that's national level attention stuff. So I think Brad Stevens has now taken the lead. And again, Dwayne Casey's candidacy is very solid. And if he ended up winning it, that's not, you might sit there and be like, it's bullshit, or that's hard. It's not bullshit. It's legitimate. He has a legitimate claim, and it really is a neck and neck race. I know that we on the Celtics side have our opinions, and it's totally legitimate. You're not wrong in what you're saying about Brad Stevens. I'm just saying that Dwayne Casey has a very, very legitimate case to be made for this year's Coach of the Year. So let's just kind of wait and see how that goes. But especially if the Celtics win one of the two games against the Raptors, they don't even have to overtake them for the top seed. The fact that the Celtics are even close after everything that happened, the fact that they have 52 wins is pretty damn amazing. Pretty damn amazing. So I think if the Celtics can win one of those games against the Raptors, that might just solidify Brad Stevens as the top seed. The Coach of the Year, sorry. And other news, Joel Embiid is out with a facial fracture. And I don't mean to laugh at the injury. I'm laughing at the circumstance of Joel Embiid getting his face busted by Markelle Fultz. Markelle Fultz, who missed the entire season save for the first few games of the year. Fultz finally comes back, finally, and he crashes into Joel Embiid and knocks the most important player on the Sixers out with a concussion and a facial fracture that requires surgery. Are you kidding me? Markelle Fultz's rookie season is cursed. And I don't believe in actual curses, but damn it. That guy, to leave early with some mysterious shoulder impingement, whatever, and then to spend the next most of the season, that doesn't even make sense, but I'm going to continue, that next stretch of 60-plus games with Zapruder film type videos of his shot looking like absolute hot garbage, to finally say, okay, I'm coming back for the last 10 games of the season or 8 or 9 games, whatever it is, and then break Joel Embiid's face? Are you nuts? Now, the Sixers, who are currently the 4th seed, can fall down to 5th, can maybe fall to 6th. John Wall back tonight in uniform, not playing, but back in uniform. The Heat are 4 games out of that 4th spot that Philly occupies. And they are, let's see, 76 games, so 6 games left. I mean, Philly's got an easy schedule, and they've won 8 in a row. But without Embiid, could they go into a little bit of a slump? Could they fall all the way down to 7th to face the Celtics? It doesn't matter. And the Sixers are just the kings of unanswered important questions. Sam Hinkie put the process together, and we all know my feelings about the process. But regardless of where you stand, there is no definitive answer of whether this worked or not, because Hinkie was relieved of his duties before he could actually finish. And yeah, the Sixers are now 44-30, and everybody in Philly wants to give Hinkie all of the credit, but he was relieved of his duties years ago before he could make any other decisions. We don't know what decisions he would have made, and that's the beauty, I guess, of the unanswered question and what my point is. We don't know if he would have followed this exact path that got Philly to 44-30. Maybe he would have made decisions that got them to the top seed, or maybe he would have made decisions that got them out of the playoffs at this point and still tanking for other top talent. Maybe he wouldn't have made the trade for Markelle Fultz at all, and he would have Jason Tatum, or maybe he would have traded down. Who knows? Who knows what he would have done? And we could try to guess, but we don't know what the actual ending to the process would be. But I know fans in Philly, they want to give Hinkie a ton of the credit, but that's just like he's not around. He's not around to screw things up. He's not around to have this thing fall apart or make bad decisions or make bad draft picks. We don't know. And then this year, all I've heard coming into the playoffs, no one wants to play the Sixers. No one wants to play the Sixers. They're young, talented, athletic, blah, blah, blah. All true. All true, but they are super, super young. They've got no playoff experience. And here they are in the fourth position fighting for home court. We don't know where they're going to end up. Are the Sixers going to be that dangerous first round team despite their youth? Or are they going to learn a tough lesson? How's that going to affect them moving forward? We don't know, because now Embiid is out for 4 weeks. And he might miss the first round. And without Embiid, the Sixers are average. Ben Simmons is probably the rookie of the year. Although, look, I'm just happy, as an aside, I'm happy to hear other people agree with me. Like Kevin Durant on the Bill Simmons podcast, agreeing with what I think, that by spending a year just traveling with the team, not even playing. I know they didn't play in the league. I know they didn't face any NBA competition, but not going to class, not having to deal with whatever is going on in college, having the opportunity to learn a system, to travel with the team, to understand what's going on, that puts you at a competitive advantage. Ben Simmons had not before this season played in the NBA, but he still had an advantage over Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum, who a year ago were just wrapping up their March Madness. So, but that's an aside. I'm going to let it go. Simmons, under the rules, is probably going to be the rookie of the year. Even though Markelle Fultz, who was an actual rookie, played 6 games this year. And this is really the question I want to know. Markelle Fultz has played 104 minutes in 6 games. Okay? That averages out to 17 minutes a game. 6 games in the NBA. He is not eligible for Rookie of the Year next year. What did he get in those 6 games, in those 104 minutes, that make him so much more prepared than Simmons just because he played those 104 minutes? What does that do for him? Nothing. Nothing. But he can't win Rookie of the Year next year. Simmons can this year. And he will. I digress. Can you tell I'm triggered with this Philly stuff? Bottom line is, Simmons is very talented, but without Embiid, he falls off. His production falls off. And then beyond that, Fultz isn't ready to do anything in the playoffs. Saric is good, but he's not ready to do anything in the playoffs. None of these guys are going to be as good, because Embiid is the guy in Philly. He's the guy. And now without him, with that facial fracture and the concussion, we'll never know. We'll never know if Philly was ready to do anything this year. And they'll have to go into next season, and those guys will have some playoff experience going into next year's playoffs. But Embiid won't. These guys are going to lose in the first round without Embiid. Embiid won't have that experience. And now you'll have another year. And if they lose next year because Embiid isn't necessarily ready, we'll see. I don't know how that's going to go. But if they don't, then that's another year. Another year that Philly has to wait. How many years is Philly going to wait? How many years are you going to wait, Philly fans, before things have to change again? So we'll see. All right, Ray Allen. I promise I'll talk about Ray Allen. Ray Allen continues to talk because he's promoting his book. And he says that he hopes that fans will remember the title that he helped win for the Celtics. Yes, we are all happy. And I am speaking as a guy who publicly has said, I didn't give a shit that Ray Allen left. Now, I skew towards the players. Free agent can leave, and I'm not going to hold it against him. A free agent can leave and go to another city. So the Gordon Hayward stuff to Boston, fine. Ray Allen to Miami, I didn't like it, but fine. That's totally his right, and it doesn't bother me that he exercises right. I didn't like, as a fan, that he went to Miami, but it's whatever. That's, I don't hold it against them. He can make the decision for whatever he wants. A free agent can go to another team, and it doesn't matter what team it is. If Paul Pierce, as a free agent in the middle of it all, went to the Lakers, I would not have liked it at all, but he was, if he was a free agent and that's what he wanted to do, I would not hold it against him. Free agents can go. They've earned that right because at the same time, they can be traded at any time. That's part of the trade-off. If a guy can be traded, if you can sit there and say, all right, I accept that at any time, the team, for whatever reason, can decide I can be shipped to another city and I have to uproot my entire life to go to wherever, Milwaukee, to Los Angeles, to Dallas, to wherever, New Orleans, wherever you want to send me. That's part of the deal. I make a lot of money, but at the same time, you get to ship me wherever because you have that opportunity. But I also, when my contract is up, I get to go wherever I want. I can stay if I want to stay. I can go somewhere else if I want to go. That's the deal. That's part of the business. So I don't hold any of that against anybody. As much as I didn't like Isaiah Thomas being traded and I thought it sucked, that's Danny Ainge's prerogative. That's part of the deal. That's how it goes. I don't have to like it, but I can accept it, and I'm not going to hold it negatively against anybody. But God damn it, Ray Allen, will you please shut up now? Will you please shut up? Why did you write that book? Why did you even open your mouth? Why won't you just stop? Are you so sensitive? Do you so badly need attention? Do you so badly need every loose end to be tied up and have everybody love you that you can't just accept the fact that some people, they don't... I'm on your side, Ray. I'm on your side. But this compulsive desire to constantly have things just work out. No, I got to explain. Please like me. Please like me. Like me for that thing that I did. Like me for that title. Don't like me for how I like. He just goes out and just pours gasoline on things. And Danny Ainge has to go on the radio and shoot down these notions that he was out there, that Danny Ainge was making these deals or whatever. Danny Ainge is basically saying what I'm saying. But he's here's the quote from the radio. I love Ray, and I'll always be grateful for Ray and for all that he did for the Celtics. But that, in parentheses, by the way, a report that he the Celtics nearly traded Rondo to the Suns in 2009, says that is not true. I don't know where that's coming from, but I just wish these guys would get themselves back together and make some peace. It's obvious that Ray and Rondo just don't like each other anymore. Rondo, early on, emulated Ray Allen. And then he got out of what Ray Allen was doing, and he started to gravitate towards Garnett. His personality was more like Garnett. And I think Ray felt, I don't know, jilted or whatever, that caused some friction, and that's always there. And those two guys, Ray and Rondo, just don't like each other anymore. And Ray in this book is just taking every possible shot he can at Rondo. And Rondo's firing back. And it's just all a bunch of bullshit. And they just can't let it go. They can't let it go. These petty wars are stupid. They're just stupid. I just wish Ray would stop. I know he's going to sell his books, I guess. I feel like that push to sell the books is more out of a personal desire to be loved and not necessarily a need for money like Rondo suggested, which I think was more of a shot than anything. And the last topic, I want to congratulate Grant Hill, Jason Kidd, and Steve Nash for being inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. I particularly want to congratulate Grant Hill because I am of the opinion that Grant Hill is a sure Hall of Famer. And there's some discussion online that he shouldn't be. And I just wanted to let you know that you're wrong. That Grant Hill, beyond the injuries in the NBA before he was injured was on a path, I firmly believe, to be in the discussion with the Kobe's and LeBron's and the Jordans of the world. I guarantee you that he was that good. Grant Hill in Detroit before the ankle injury was on a path to be as good as those other guys, to be in that pantheon of this generation's all-time great wings. I mean, he was just so goddamn good. Even after the injury, he was really good. After everything got sorted out, he was still really good. And there's a reason why his career lasted as long as it did, because he was still really good. But the one thing that really needs to be emphasized is that this goes beyond NBA. Grant Hill was part of successful international teams for Team USA. He was part of very, very successful Duke teams, even though I'm not a Duke fan. He was part of a very, very successful Duke program. And it should tell you how good he was, because I just hate everything that comes out of Duke. But Grant Hill is one of my favorite players of all time. He's just so, so good. So good, man. But that college stuff counts, and he is absolutely one of the greatest basketball players of all time. He 100% belongs in the Hall of Fame. And I don't care what you say. You can't make an argument against him. You can miss me with all of the bullshit. The injuries, they don't matter. He's had a tremendous career from start to finish, and he was one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And just that is it. That's the bottom line. That is it. Hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I was hoping to have a guest on tonight. Things didn't work out. That's okay. We'll work it out again next time. But I hope you enjoyed me going on for about half an hour about these various topics, taking you into the weekend. Celtics are playing the Toronto Raptors in the first of two remaining head-to-head matchups. It's a big game, because if they can win that, and if seeding matters to you, that would bring them within the two games of the top seed. And Toronto still playing well, but maybe coasting a little bit. I don't know. We'll see how everything works out. I don't necessarily care. I think 1-2 Raptors Celtics is pretty much solidified, and we're just going to wait to see how things shake out below that. I think the Cavaliers will probably hold on to third now, especially with the Sixers and Embiid's injury. The Pacers might move up a little bit and get into that fourth spot, and the 4-5 will be Indy and the Sixers, with the Wizards, Heat, and Bucks all within a game and a half of each other at the bottom of the standings. So I hope you enjoyed the show. If you are not a subscriber, please subscribe. Search for us wherever you get your podcasts. If you are a subscriber, go ahead and leave us a 5-star rating and share the podcast. Spread the word. Tell all of the other Celtics fans that you know that do not listen to us. Tell them. You should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.